welcome to the official catch up. It's going to be one of those ones today where it's obviously personal opinion. Everyone's pre-warned. Just before we get into it and we introduce the guys, we obviously want to thank our sponsor, the Soccer Shop Direct. You've probably seen them, anyone that listens in, anyone that's got us on Twitter or Facebook, everywhere, you know, all your sporting needs. They're obviously associated to clubs, obviously a few kit launches and stuff. And I think we're actually due a discount code. I'll need to actually ask them about that, but I'm sure we should have a discount code. But we'll get in touch with them, obviously. But I want to thank them for their continued support. It's been kind of on and off with podcasts lately because there's not really been much to talk about. But I don't think this I think this one's going to be different. I think there is a lot to cover. And on that note, obviously, we'll welcome in Derek. How are you doing, Derek?
I'm good, mate. How's you?
Yeah, good. Obviously, we've got Sean. Sean.
Good, bit slow to the keypad there, but yeah, good, thanks.
And Ben, full squad. Ben, how are we doing?
Not bad, son, not bad.
And as I mentioned, obviously, it will be one of these ones. Obviously, you guys are associated to clubs, so all our own viewpoints, all our sort of personal opinions, if you will. But let's start with the Let Fans In campaign that we obviously put together, the open letter. What are your sort of opinions on how that went, first of all, Derek?
Well, I think it's still going. And I can't see it ending until it works, basically. But it's one of these things that I feel like it took a wee knock when the government kind of imposed further restrictions.
Yeah.
Not soon after it kind of started. But the momentum's been steadily growing behind it. The first to get MPs and MSPs onto it was a massive thing. And obviously there's been outlets like the Daily Record picked up on it as well. So by the media outlets have picked up on it, kind of name dropping us as well, giving us credit for that. We appreciate it. It's something that we had to do. And I think it'll be obvious to anyone that's listening to this podcast now that clubs are in dire straits, ultimately. And without punters coming in, the West of Scotland League did a survey this week to clubs, and more than half of them said, well, we can't function without fans. It's just not going to happen. So it's massive. Basically, we either need fans coming in the gates, socially distanced, responsibly, and I've got no idea why that can't be done, or we need financial support for clubs. It's one of the two. If we do nothing, clubs will die. Simple as that. And we cannot allow that to happen because they're so important for the local communities. And that's been proven, especially in the last 6 months with the pandemic, because most clubs that I can see have had a really positive effect in our local communities when lockdown happened and all that kind of thing. It's something that brings people together. They'll be needed more than ever once we're back to normal, quote unquote. And it's frustrating that it took a bunch of four guys that have a laugh in a podcast to get something going with it, because surely the governing body should have been the ones to lead the way in it. They've, for whatever reason, been complacent. I know they'd been getting representations from the likes of George, from his counterparts in the Highland League as well. Nothing's been forthcoming. The Lowlands made their views clear that when the SPFL Trust and James Anderson's obviously very generous donation to them went out to SPFL clubs, George made his feelings very clear to the governing body and to the SPFL that, well, where's the guidance for us for non-league? You've basically ignored us here. But it's something that's going to keep going and going, and I don't think the government have helped themselves. In this case, I'm talking about the Scottish government, because obviously the initial roadmap told us if we got to stage four, that's when fans could come back. But since then, and since all the changes and kind of going here and there with restrictions, they've not laid it out in black and white, the reasoning and what we need to do to get to that point. And I think that would quell all debate. And I don't know if anyone listened to Sports Sound this weekend.
Yep.
Which was essentially a bunch of old men moaning like the whole time. And I don't think it helped our cause, I'll be honest, because they were coming at it from a different angle, talking about how can Celtic have fans on, basically. But we need to flip that on its head. Like, I don't see the Premiership or any of those kind of bigger leagues getting fans in anytime soon. But why can't we have 100 punters through the door non-league? Because England have shown that it can be done. There's, like, basically, if you look at what's happened down south with the FA Cup recently, there is a blueprint to follow, and it hasn't created any extra issues, virus-wise. There hasn't been an outbreak at any games, for what I can tell. So surely if there's evidence there, fair across the border, we should be able to look at that and say, do you know what? At least run a test event, non-league-wise, cap the numbers. If it works, go with it.
Yeah, and you were actually surprisingly quite calm during that. I'm sure it'll change as it goes on. I'm actually quite surprised. But yeah, as you mentioned, obviously, the West of Scotland are now sort of supporting the campaign. I think there's a massive worry about the West of Scotland. The South of Scotland, the whole league's obviously supporting the campaign. Bonnie Rigg from the Lowland League, noticeably. Pennycook Athletic from the East of Scotland. Carnoustie Panmure from the East Juniors. There's obviously been a number of West clubs, obviously, because that's where the biggest concern is. But most sort of recently, obviously, Glencairn have obviously been sort of boisterous, and whether, you know, the interim management group, I think it's Peter Ferguson, who's involved in the club, and obviously today I think the manager's had his say as well. But we'll go to you, Ben, on the West, because obviously that's where there seems to be the most concern surrounding whether the fans can come in and obviously whether the season can go ahead. What are your sort of thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think it's absolutely crucial for all clubs in our level. But certainly in the West, there's a big concern around the fans. I think some clubs have other revenue streams, but by and large, the main revenue stream is your gates. And I think you'll find in teams in the West, certainly the Premiership-wise, there's fairly big wage bills in some teams, and there's absolutely no way for them to really make that money pay the wages. So I think you're going to have a situation where I think they're basically asking players to play for free, effectively. Now, maybe on an expenses type basis. But that might work to begin with, because it's all kind of new and getting back to football and all that kind of stuff. But I think longer term, that you might find come maybe Christmas, you might start to see players kind of dropping out, and then you maybe have slight issues with maybe players who aren't getting paid at one club, but they might be able to get paid at a kind of another team, and they might decide to walk away, and it can affect teams like that. So I think, yeah, for us, or for me personally, I think it's one or two things. As I said, it's money to support the clubs through this situation, or it's the fans back in the door, whichever the governing bodies and the government themselves can actually do. I think we've seen already that there's been a good support from MSPs and MPs, and questions being put to the First Minister and kind of daily press briefings and in First Minister's questions. At least there's support there in the government, and I certainly have seen some stuff certainly from SNP MSPs as well, which is good, because that's obviously the party that are in control. So if they have that view that we need to do it, then certainly it might give us a bit of hope. Certainly, my personal view is that I don't see it happening. I just don't know how we get to that. I think, again, as Moz has said, that it's been phase four all along, and we're not at phase four. So I think that's what the government will throw back at us every time that we ask about fans getting back in, that, oh, we said phase four, we're still in phase three, we need to move through the stages like we're told. So if we get any sort of change, it's going to have to adapt to essentially the phase three rules, and I don't think the government will really want to do that. Now, I'm going to quote my own manager, Christine, the other day. He made a good point about starting the season. I think if we decide to not start the season, then the government and the SFA can kind of ignore our league sort of thing. So I think the right thing to do is start, and hopefully then the support will come at some point. So yeah, a lot of concern, not just, I guess, money as well, but I think there's a lot of concern from players around travel and changing rooms and all that kind of stuff as well. So there's a lot of, I'm sure we'll touch on that in more detail in a bit, but certainly that listening to what's been said on Twitter by players and speaking to individuals, it seems like that's a concern as well. So who knows? I think it's all up in the air. I think the West have a vote on Tuesday, I believe. So they'll vote on what's to happen. There's been a few questions posed to the club committees, and they'll have to make a decision basically on Tuesday. And I think we'll probably get that by the end of the week, sort of thing. But I think the government are due to kind of discuss the restrictions on Monday, I think it's the 5th, I believe.
Yeah.
So we might see a bit of hope out of that. Depends, obviously, how things are going, the numbers-wise, and with coronavirus, it doesn't look great, does it? It's still going kind of up the way rather than down the way. So, yeah, wee bit concerned, certainly for the clubs. I think we'll be struggling to see clubs survive. I think that'll be the thing. I think you might be able to start, but will the clubs survive? And I guess I've said it from the beginning, and I think I would be I wouldn't be surprised rather if the season doesn't finish as well once we may get to January, February, March, and if we're still none the wiser with fans.
Yeah, and obviously we're all going to, we'll sort of break it down a wee bit sort of further into the podcast. You obviously mentioned, Derek, about, I believe that too, obviously with the new restrictions. I think you mentioned on Monday there that there's probably going to be I think the government are calling it a circuit breaker sort of lockdown restriction. Mm-hmm. I think the other thing obviously was East Stirlingshire. They had one positive case of COVID of an individual. The whole club was locked down. We obviously sort of lobbied our campaign to try and understand the rules in regards to that. Obviously it did get reversed. I think it was a muck-up or whatever from the track and trace team. But what are your thoughts on that, Sean, in terms of what happened with East Stirlingshire and the...
I think like most that's happening just now is just frustration because we'd seen teams get hit. I mean, the Shire one was one guy that had been tested, and we've seen teams elsewhere that have had numerous players and they've still gone on to play and the whole team's not had to self-isolate. I think it was just frustration, same as everything around this COVID and everything for not letting fans into when we start the season. It just wasn't very clear, and it was good that we were able to actually go out, and it's one of the few things we've actually got an answer to. It was good to see Shire able to get back to training, because that's going to be one of the biggies, is when you start to get positive cases at this level and games get postponed. It's already a really cramped season as it is without adding in the extra games that teams are going to have to play as a consequence of the teams' games getting suspended due to COVID. So it was good to get a bit of clarity on that and to be able to know where we stand. And it happened, I suppose, during friendly and during pre-season, as opposed to the middle of the season, I suppose, is the biggest thing.
Yep. So we're probably at a stage where we'll properly get into this now. We'll start with the player concerns. Obviously, there's sort of mixed views between players. I don't think there's any middle ground, really. I've seen players, obviously, totally for playing it, saying if you don't want to play, then that's your choice. Sort of, as you said earlier, Derek, obviously, man up. I think the thing was, but looking yesterday, I watched the Beef Juniors sort of Free Rovers game, the stream that they put on. I mean, the weather was awful. Is there a lot of concern for players' health and safety, really, considering the sort of conditions that they might have to play in? Obviously, out with COVID.
There has to be. As you were saying there, there's kind of two camps that players seem to fit in now. Either the man up, play, these are the rules, just get on with it, or the, well, can we all just have changing rooms type. Obviously, we can't have showers for whatever reason in the rules. I'm assuming it's a distancing thing. But the issue is, if you've got a team playing away in torrential rain like we've had this weekend, and say it's an away game a couple hours away, and they're also asking players to travel separately just now as well. So you get guys who are finishing that game, they're not allowed to have their shower or whatever, so they're getting into the car again, mock it, freezing, soaking, and driving home for 2 hours, and you're telling me they're not going to get a cold and potentially think they'll get COVID sometimes. I mean, doesn't it sound like a great recipe for success to me? And obviously, you can get off the pitch, kind of throw the clothes off, get a dry done and get trackies on, but you're still a bit minging,
yeah.
which isn't ideal, but it's the rules we've got. If we want to play football, this is what we need to do now. So we're going to have to find ways to kind of make the burden a bit less on players and keep them, well, fit and healthy, you know?
I'm just going to say, can I add to the fact about the no showering and not getting changed? I think you might end up seeing players actually getting kind of like physical injuries rather than like kind of from a health point of view. Because I guess if you're coming out and you're cold and your muscles starting to seize up, you might end up doing yourself more damage, kind of in between training because you've not had the proper kind of recovery. And I think the other thing is about the travel. I mean, I didn't realise this at all that teams couldn't travel together and have to all separately. Thing for me is, how does that work then? Can you only pick players in that can drive? I mean, I think I was speaking to a team the other day, and I think they had four players who couldn't come to a game because they couldn't drive. So you've got to pick your squad based on who can drive, or is there an expectation that the boys have to get trains or service buses to matches and the hassle of that? I mean, imagine trying to get to. I'm trying to think of a really bad example. Maybe good something down in the South League, the South Scotland League, where there's maybe not a local train station, or there's not really great bus routes and connections to get to the actual match. You're going to start messing around with taxis. I mean, that's not going to be cheap for players. There's an expectation that the clubs pay those taxis, for example. Like for us in Kawinna, we've got a train station that's pretty much 5 minutes from the train station from the ground, so it would be fine for our guys, I think. Probably, but there'll be other clubs out there that are kind of in the wilderness and probably quite difficult to get to. Certainly, if for example, you had a West team playing an East team in the Cup or something like that, there's not going to be a real probable way to do it. I think you probably could get buses. I don't see the objection if you can get on a service bus, a mega bus or whatever, you can wear masks and sitting in separately, then you should be able to get a bus to a match. I don't see why that's an issue, but it seems to be the rules, isn't it? That's what they're telling us, that you've got to travel separately, you've got to travel in your kit. So
I mean,
it's a weird one.
If you've got one positive case and the boys have been in a team coach together, every team's going to have to do an Easterling when there's a positive case. That's the flip side of it. But are they going to make us do that anyway if it's track and trace? Because no team at our level is going to be paying for testing. So
exactly.
Either people are going to find out by doing their own tests, like away from the track and trace, or if they do it through track and trace, whole clubs are going to get shut down for what, 10 days shy of a shutdown. So it's a kind of try to find the balance, and it's pretty tough.
On the taxi note, I don't know how, I can't really speak on how safe it is to get into a taxi, but assuming it would probably be safer with a teammate you trust, you know, where they've been, to a taxi driver that could have had anyone in the car. You know what I mean? I think you're kind of pushing. For me, this looks like it's sort of set up to fail, really, because as soon as the clubs or the players start sort of going on about welfare and that, that's when the Scottish Government can say, look, or the SFA can say, look, we'll shut you down then, if you're that concerned about it. But it was a point made by St. Cuthbert's manager, Jordan Williamson. I think it's an excellent point. Not all players can drive. And like you said, you know, they have to sort of decide who can play in terms of who can drive and stuff. And I think it's to ask a part-time player to sort of pay money towards, you know, get taxis and trains. And I think it's not good. It really isn't great, to be honest.
Yeah, I think the other thing as well about the whole virus thing, it doesn't seem like that anybody's really able to avoid it, let's be honest. Look at Kilmarnock as an example. They've got a full club who are in a bubble, and it's been brought into the club. I'm not too sure how, but it's certainly affected them. Their game is off on Friday night, and there's talk now that they're going to have to potentially forfeit some matches in the Betfred Cup and stuff. So, I mean, in Scotland, people can't avoid it. I mean, Sadio Mane, a lot of people got tested positive, and I think now Mo Salah is the same, and a couple of Liverpool players are now having to isolate. So if teams like Liverpool can't avoid it, what hope have we got in Tier 6 and Tier 7, and obviously Tier 5 as well, don't forget the good old Lowland League chaps. So I think that's a concern if these big clubs who are spending money testing and kind of living in bubbles, and I think sounding like, I think some chat about kind of teams in the Premiership in England. They're having to pretty much isolate every day anyway, and then just go to training and come home. That doesn't sound like so. If they're still catching the virus because they're in these bubbles and things like that, I think it's going to be a difficult one. And as Sean mentioned about games getting cancelled and stuff like that because of COVID. I've just seen it yesterday. There was, what, 4 games off because somebody tested positive or a team tested positive for COVID. So you're not going to have much room for scope, certainly. Like in the West, there's not many teams that have got floodlights, for example. So being able to play matches at night is going to be a challenge. I don't know what it's like over in the East, for example, but I'd imagine similar in terms of capability to fit in matches. And last thing you want is a season run to June, July, because you've had to, it's bad enough as it is, but the weather and stuff like that, I think you're going to really, really struggle to get a season kind of completed.
I think on the player point of view, obviously with the travelling, and I noticed, I don't think you'll mind me saying, but obviously Bonnie Rigg Rose defender Jonathan Brown posted yesterday saying that like he's got work to go to after the game, you know what I mean? So how, you know, I don't think it would be very reasonable for him to turn up to his work, absolutely mock it or, you know, cold shivering or whatever it would be. But I think there's a case for, there's players that will, there's players that won't, but because of the travel thing, I think there's also players that can't basically get to games. And it's just I don't know if there could be like a, you know, how we have like sort of social bubbles in terms of households and stuff. I don't know if there could be a way of maybe putting a bubble of 2 players in a car or something like that, but I don't know. I think that's a killer for a lot of players, I would suggest.
I think that's what most teams will be trying to organise, in terms of, obviously, if the rules state at that time that you can have 1 or 2 other households in your bubble. But the issue is, if they do local lockdowns and you're not allowed any bubble whatsoever, suddenly you've got players that can't drive left in the sidelines going, I can't get to the game. You know, it's a really tough situation, but nothing about where we are right now is going to be easy, and it's not going to be simple. Like, we're going to have issues crop up during the season. I'll tell you, anyone listening right now, if you think this is complex now, wait till a month in. I guarantee you other things will get thrown at us. But it's a miracle at this point that we've got a season potentially starting this weekend. And I think it's testament to, well, anyone behind the leagues themselves, especially. We know the Lowlands definitely starting. The West might be delayed. We'll wait and see there. The East, again, we're waiting for clarity. The South have said that they'll play, so we know that much. But the worry I've got is, and I mentioned this to you guys during the week, we'll get to next weekend. I think there'll be at least one game postponed of the new fixtures, the proper league fixtures. And every single week after that, there's going to be games off. And it just gets to the point, as Ben says, with fixture congestion, that there's going to be so many games to try and fit in again. Even if they get rearranged, you don't know if one of those teams will suddenly be locked in again. It's going to be really, really tough to get a full campaign played without a vaccine coming along at kind of New Year time. And even then, if we get vaccinated in New Year, are we asking guys to play 2 games a week for the rest of the year? Like, it's going to be a really, really tough campaign for all of us.
Well, we're actually doing that anyway, really, Mozza, you know, with the 2 games a week, pretty much. It's, you know, pretty much Saturday, Tuesday, Wednesday or whatever. So,
yeah,
it's a massive ask. It is a massive ask. It's on players as well as clubs and everyone else.
I suspect the SPFL have kind of given a heads up to what will happen with it, in that they've gone and cancelled the Challenge Cup.
Yeah.
And I suspect that's exactly what will happen at all levels. It'll be cup competitions, it'll be sacrificed, even if they get started, just to ease the load, so to speak.
I was going to say a point in the vaccine you mentioned there, Muzza. Even I think if we get a vaccine, I think that'll still take a lot of time to... I mean, how are you going to manage to vaccine millions of people in a short space of time to get to a point where football is safe to play? I think football players aren't going to be kind of high up the list of priority in terms of who gets a vaccine. So even that, I think you're still going to be a case of struggling. I think for me, they've got to get, you've got to give us a chance to play. I think that's the key point. Let's get the fans in, give us the opportunity to prove ourselves. And if we can't do it, then tough shit, we're locked down again. I mean, back to no fans. I mean, that's how I feel about it. Let us get the opportunity to prove ourselves, and then we can take from there. That's certainly my view, and I think it's probably a view shared by a lot of people, to be honest. But it doesn't seem like that's even up for debate. I think listening to what kind of the experts and politicians are saying, it sounds like it's probably going to be some sort of financial support. And now that's great as a kind of stopgap. But I mean, how long will that last? We've seen with the furlough scheme, for example, in the UK, it only was up to what, October there. So money doesn't last forever. So I think we have to make our own way and try and get through this on our own rather than kind of relying on funds.
Can I throw a question out there for you boys? Because I'm interested to hear what your thoughts were on it. Neil Doncaster came out yesterday, but he didn't technically say these words, but he agreed with Mike Mulroney, who's ALWA's chairman and also on the SFA board, saying that they believe that this whole getting fans into games and so on and so forth is a political decision rather than a clinical one. And it's quite a bold for guys in the governing body to make, given that surely we should be doing everything to be pals with the government to get our way. But I'm just curious to see what you guys think of, like, the fact that they're not exactly known for outlandish statements like this, and then they dropped that one on us. So what do you think?
Politics, so it's not one I usually get involved in too much, to be honest, but I can't see the political gain on what's going on at the moment, because there's players' health and well-being getting put at risk. Same with fans. It's a huge pastime for fans getting to go and watch the football, and to say that you're not allowed to go to a ground, but you're allowed to go into the pub, sit and drink alcohol in close proximity to other people if you want to watch football and get the outlet, is just, I don't think there can be any political gain here for, it's just not coming across very well. But as for the deep down politics, it's no one that I really get involved in, to be honest.
For me, yeah, I think it's one of the dumbest things I've ever heard during lockdown, to be quite honest, and I'm quite happy to say that. I don't understand where there can be political gain, like Sean said. I don't see what a political party has to achieve by saying, no, you can't have fans in. I mean, let's face it, right now we're talking about, it's an election year in Scotland, so potentially, I think there's possible chance that they might not actually have the voting in the elections in May, but it's certainly for parties it's an election year, and you don't want to be going and annoying your electorate right now. It's probably bad enough with some of the stuff that's been happening, and I think if you do that to football fans, I just can't understand where that comment comes from. I called out a few people on Twitter last night about it, when no one there really able to kind of back it up either, and I just think, what political motivation would you have to say, nah, see all the 200,000 football fans that go to games in tier 6 or tier 5 or tier 7 or even tier 4 of football, nah, we don't want them in. That's crazy. Like, why would they even say that? I mean, I know these guys at the top of the Scottish football aren't the greatest at running the game, but to make comments like that, it's just, as you said, Mother, it's just going to upset the people involved who make the decisions, and we're relying on the likes of the First Minister or Jason Leach or these guys that are involved in the kind of advice and guidance to basically give us a chance, and we're just going to, all we're going to do is piss them off by saying it's political. But I think that's just what I said at the beginning, the dumbest thing I've heard so far. I don't understand where that comes from, but yeah, it's a weird one.
One of the big things it all boils down to is protecting that SPL. And I think even letting fans into lower league football is going to put pressure on to allowing fans into SPL football. And as soon as that happens and you start to get outbreaks connected to SPL football, there's going to be, you know, calls for some to get the football league up there stopped as well. I think a lot of it boils down to just trying to preserve the SPL, and that's one of the most frustrating things.
Yeah, I actually quite agree with that, Sean, because I think it's a case of, like, I believe Jason Leach had said basically in a reply to that, you know, you can't have it all, and, you know, we can't open everything. But it just, like at the moment, the most of the concerns that I've seen are basically like, well, fans will flock to pubs. And my reasoning on that is, well, they can do that anyway. Anyone can go to a pub socially distanced. And the thing is, what people don't actually mention a lot is most pubs are actually doing temperature tests and track and trace. So if it can be done at pubs, surely it can be done at football grounds with a, you know, even a 10% capacity. I think, well, Michael Booth, who actually helps with a non-league Wikipedia, he put out a table with basically all the non-league leagues, and most of them could run with a 10% capacity or 100, less than 100 fans. So it's one of those things. But in terms of the politics of it, I think I agree with you guys. I don't think there's a lot of political meaning behind it. I mean, there is a sort of, we certainly feel, I can't talk for everyone, but there is a feeling amongst football fans that we do get looked down on by the sort of, I guess it becomes a class issue, the ruling classes, if you will, because it's such a, you know, it's a working man's game, really. But in terms of actually, the way I see it with that is, I think it's passing the buck. When you always have like two or three organisations at the top of the chain, they'll blame each other. Oh, it's not us making these decisions, it's the Scottish Government. Oh, it's the Scottish Government saying, oh, it's not us making decisions, it's the SPFL. They're just passing the buck, and it goes back to what Sean was saying in terms of, you know, I think everyone's petrified that they open up football and then there is suddenly COVID cases that arise. It's like they don't want to take the risk, but what we're saying, and this is what it boils down to, what we're saying is, give us a chance to prove you wrong. Give us a chance to see if this works, because we're not going to find out if we don't give us a chance.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty much in agreement with all these and what you said there, because I couldn't believe what I heard, I'll be honest, when it came out. I couldn't believe it even more, and Doncaster agreed with it. I feel like they're just lashing out because they're frustrated rather than coming for a place of kind of like being totally serious behind it. The thing that's frustrating me is there seems to be an idea, and it's rampant on Twitter the now, to quote upon, that rugby fans are getting treated differently. That, oh, if we were rugby, we'd be getting fans back in. The rugby games are the same position as we are. They're not getting punters in the door. There was this kind of idea because they were looking at making one of the Edinburgh games a test event. But you can't have that logic when you've had Aberdeen having a test event, when you've had a couple other teams in the Premiership the same weekend had punters in for a test. It's just all sports of spectator sports are in the same boat just now. It's where we are. And
unless you're the stock cars.
Not now, because I don't want people blaming us for that, by the way, so let me just drop this in. We might have drawn attention to the fact that, I can't remember if it was Lugeley or somewhere like that had the punters in the stock cars. Technically, that shouldn't have been allowed, and they're now not. Don't blame us. Don't shoot the messenger. We just pointed at something. The most important thing, like, in terms of taking a step forward, in my opinion right now, is that we get to a place where, in terms of non-league, we can say to the Scottish Government, to the coronavirus committee, basically, that looks after it, led by Jason Leach, here's an example for England. Non-league teams, away down to step 10, we're talking here, so we're talking about two-man in a dug crowds, were able to do track and trace. And it was as simple as, line up outside the stadium, give all your details, sanitise, in you go. It's get clearly marked points for you to stand at. You keep your distance, fella. People, roaring success. Because people were that desperate to get into games, to support their local teams, that they complied fully. And I think that's where we'd get to in Scotland, that people would be so desperate to see a game again. You forget it's been over 6 months now that anyone other than the lucky folk for the test events here have seen a proper game of football in the flesh. And people will do anything at this point to get in and be able to see their team, their local team again. So if we can get to an understanding where, say there's a couple of test events, or even 50 folk or 100 folk at tier 5, tier 6, tier 7, and do that successfully, that's what we need to be able to step forward and say, right, now's the time to get fans in the league and we can go for there. And I actually think the SPFL's got it all wrong, because it'd be easier for us to start at the bottom of the pyramid and work up, yeah, rather than saying, oh, why can't Aloha have punters in? Why can't any other team in, say, Championship to League 2? Like, if we start with non-league improvement, there's no reason why it can't work as well.
You know the stupid, this should have been done at the beginning. You know, Neil Doncaster should have been coming out and saying, because let's face it, he's been having meetings with clubs from all over, having to hear it. If that is the case, why has he not been advocating for the clubs from the beginning? That's what I don't understand. Why isn't he saying, look, I don't have the answers, guys? Instead of giving potentially silly answers, pretending like he'd... That's what I don't get about this. Surely it couldn't have been all political. Surely he should have been speaking either for the clubs or saying, just be honest. We're just wanting honesty. Like, well, it goes back to what you said, much earlier, Derek, about why, right, give us a reason why this can't happen. If you're saying we can't socially distance, or the clubs can't do this and that, or players can't do this, give us the blueprint why. And if I know there will be people that say, oh, well, you know, that's not acceptable, whatever, but at least give us a bloody reason why we can't do it.
Don't know why you haven't got Neil Doncaster. This podcast totally thinks he's a really competent leader.
I was a stand-up guy.
I was a bit worried that we were starting to agree with him, because of the whole of this lockdown, we've been having a bit of a pop at him, to be fair, and I was like, the massive irony is that we're actually maybe starting to agree with him, but I don't think we're quite there yet, Derek.
Like, that ultimately, when it comes to the likes of Neil Doncaster, his only focus is SPFL, and that was shown this week, by the way. We do need to have a go at them about the Challenge Cup getting cancelled, because as you'll have seen in your Twitter feeds, all the Highland and Lowland representatives were not consulted and found out about that via Twitter, which is an absolute disgrace. Imagine not even having the decency to send an email to the clubs that are in your cup competition saying, oh, by the way, it's not happening this year. And we didn't ask your opinion, we only asked their team's opinion. You know what I mean? It's just, it's a nonsense. And it doesn't help this image that they've got, and they've got deservedly, in my opinion, that they only care about themselves and it's very self-preservation-like, and they don't really like the idea of all these ambitious Tier 5 and down teams now pushing to get in and take established teams, quote-unquote, team places. So we need to have a go at them for that, because that was an utter disgrace.
I think, for me, I think it's a time where we maybe just think about ourselves at Tier 5 and below, and forget about the SPFL and above. I think it's been clear from different things that have happened over the last 6 months that they don't care about us at the bottom. So let's just try and get, if we can get fans back in at Tier 5, Tier 6, Tier 7, then great. And who cares what happens with the SPFL? The SPFL Premiership teams should be able to survive with the TV deals and other revenue streams that they have. So I'm of the opinion, I'm not usually like that as well. I'm usually one for looking after everyone. But right now, I'm just so annoyed with what's happening at the top of Scottish football that let's just get our own house sorted out and let's not care about the rest. Yeah. One other thing I wanted to say was, maybe we should just call out Jason Leach himself to maybe come on the podcast and have a discussion about it. I think I've seen him do different press things and different meeting different groups of people and Zoom calls and all that. Jason Leach, come on the podcast and let us chat about, you know, why we can't do it. I think if clubs got an explanation, then that might help. And this would be a great platform for him to do that. So, Jason Leach, hopefully we'll tag you in this post when it goes out on Twitter and come and have a chat with us, because it would be good to hear kind of why. I think going on at the point about why, I'm going to play devil's advocate for a second. Are we perhaps taking our own medicine for kind of fans' past behaviour? That's something I've often thought about. I think it's been clear over the last 20, 30 years in Scottish football that fans have had their moments in terms of kind of sectarianism, behaviour in stadiums, like pitch invasions and breaking seats and toilets and things like that, and grounds, pyrotechnics, fireworks, smoke bombs, all that kind of stuff. Are we perhaps now just taking our medicine because we haven't maybe shown before that we can behave appropriately?
I've been to a lot of football games in my life, you know, at all levels, I have been to one game that I was generally sort of like, this isn't on. And that was the Scottish Cup semi-final at Ibrox, where Rangers played Dundee United. And that was obviously weathering that went on that day, you know, fans ripping up seats and probably potentially Celtic fans in with the Dundee United lot and all that sort of stuff. That is one example. But apart from that, like, I don't think it's a massive... I might be wrong. You guys might have other examples, but is there been a lot of games that folk have actually been properly out of order, like uncontrollable? I don't think so. Not in my opinion. But again, I guess I'm a football fan, but that's the one game that comes to mind where I was thinking, oh God, this is like the way folk are behaving. It's no great or whatever. But that's the problem. The perception of football fans, though, we talked about it earlier, that we're all yobs and this, that, and the next. It's just, I don't think it's true. Especially in non-league. Maybe, I think, actually, there is probably another wee example of the Celtic-Auchinleck Scottish Cup game, I would say, was probably a wee bit heated between the fans and stuff like that. But there was nothing, there was no fighting or anything like that going on. It was obviously just, you know, maybe back and forth for the singing and all this sort of stuff. But we're no yobs. I don't believe that for a second.
No, of course we're not. But if you've got a socially distant crowd, you're not going to get that same level of heatedness. You're just not going to get that kind of heavy atmosphere. It's just, it's not going to happen. Realise punters there. And to be honest, I know Ben's thrown that out there as devil's advocate. That might be the way that the kind of the powers that be are looking at it in terms of your Rangers, your Celtic, or the bigger sides, worried that, well, what happens if we have an Old Firm game and we're letting some punters in, you know? But that's where I think if we do band together as non-league, say tier 5 and below, we've got an advantage because there's no history of like massive issues at our level, obviously, because there's less people going on to games and such. Like, are there incidents? Of course there are incidents. The same as every sport, there's always something. And we've always been pretty good, I think, on this podcast at calling it out. But I just think we have such a better chance if we are looking after ourselves as non-league to say, let us have the test events, because you've got so much less risk of kind of second and third factors if we've got 100 punters in a ground compared to bigger teams with bigger issues, I guess, would be the way you put it.
It could be a great advert for Scottish football, to be honest. The fact that down south are doing it, and you've already said it's a great advert for down south, the way that they handled it. It's a shame that we're not getting afforded the same opportunity up here, because it could be a chance to show, you know, in a positive light, what we're able to do. And the fact that they're saying no, we're not going to allow that to happen is, I've used the word a lot, but again, frustrating.
The other question that I've then got is, how does it work? Because obviously, most people are fans of Premiership teams. If Premiership teams couldn't get into the Premiership fans are, couldn't get into their games, would they start coming to watch our games? Which I think, in a perfect world, that would be great, that you get more people coming to watch non-league football in Scotland. But would that maybe have an effect on like the numbers? How do you control that? Would you limit it to like season tickets or things like that? Because I think that would be maybe a concern, that you maybe all of a sudden a team who has 100 fans that come every week religiously all of a sudden pick up an extra 100 fans because they can't go and watch, say, Kilmarnock or St Mirren or Hamilton or something like that, and they go and watch the local side, which would be, as I say, great for the clubs in terms of revenue and growing the game and a fan base. But I think that would be a concern as well. I'm not trying to put a dampener on things, but I think we're all too quick to kind of jump in and say, oh, but we can do it. There is also another side to this, and I again go back to Mr. Leach, but we don't know what the other view is, so we have to just surmise and kind of guess what their thoughts are. And I've had a bit of a thought about it myself in the last few days, maybe just seen it, trying to see it from the other side. And I think that's the thing that, yeah, we really need to know what the view is because it's great that MSPs can tell us, oh, we agree, but what do the actual experts that are involved in making these decisions actually think? So, once again, Mr. Leach, if you want to come and have a chat,
That's the thing, Ben, though. I think that's manageable, because what I would put in place, and I think that's a good point, obviously, it's all right for us to say, oh, this should be happening. But if we give examples, my thing for that would obviously be season ticket holders first, priority, and then do like a queue system, first come, first serve, then maybe, right, email whoever, sign up or whatever, email, right, you come at such and such a time, you come at such and such a time. It can be done easily. Well, not easily, but it can be done, I would say. And then if you get people up at the gate, you're always going to get that anyway. You get that now, you know, when there's no fans. I know it's no ideal or whatever, but if the clubs make it clear, look, this is, you know, we've got our fans in, they've been told times, I think it could be done realistically. How it's done, you know, I would do it either through like a website or signing up to something saying you're going to be at a game if you can. Just like basically if you were to go to an SPFL game, you bought your tickets basically online, you know, or noted your interest or whatever. Everything online makes things easier, and I think that could be done, right? You come to the gate at, you know, 12:30 or something, blah, blah, blah. That's how I would do it. But it is a good point. It is a good point, Ben, how, you know, the logistics, everything. And it's obviously a thing, if it was to come to pass, that clubs would have to think about.
I think a lot of clubs down south were using Eventbrite, which basically, for anyone who doesn't know what it is a website where you can sell tickets to any event. Anyone can do it. And it gives you a QR code. And if you've got an app on your phone, you scan it. And if it says, aye, this is legit, you get in. And while they take a cut, it's still better getting some money than no money. So you sell your tickets on there in advance. If you've not got a ticket, don't turn up. And that way you can cap numbers. And it seemed to be pretty successful. But Ben's right. Like, there's no point in us saying, oh, we should be able to do this because X, Y, and Z. We need to put a robust plan together and take that to, say, Jason Leach, for example, and say, look, this is what we want. This is what we're going to do. This is why we think it will work. What do you think? Without that, he's not going to approve anything, because it's all well and good somebody saying, right, can we get fans back? And they'll go, right, so have you considered X, Y, Z, this risk, that risk? What are you going to do about it? How are you going to run it? You need to actually do the groundwork. It's the same as planning a business. You need to do the groundwork and then go and get approval for it.
So just on that, I think you might have an issue. So obviously, most clubs that I live are run by volunteers, let's be honest. A mixture of people involved in clubs. There's people maybe who are kind of more old school and maybe don't understand a lot of things. So I think for me, I think I would like to see perhaps the league bringing in some people. Again, volunteers maybe who are in clubs, because I know there's people out there in clubs that are talented individuals with things like IT and health and safety and all that kind of thing. Bring them in and try and run it for all the clubs rather than kind of relying on a team who maybe don't have the people in their committee to actually implement that kind of stuff. If you can implement it for as a one platform type thing, you can then do it and scale it out to everyone else and have those people. I mean, I personally, my day job is in risk management and things like that. So I'm happily would get involved in helping all the other clubs that are involved in our league to run things. I mean, I've been involved in live streaming. Mosley, you're the same with live streams within BSC. That I'm happily help any club within the West who wanted to help on things like that, because they maybe don't understand it, or they don't have the equipment, or don't know what equipment to buy. So I think that's maybe a good approach, that people who have the skills and the knowledge band together and try and set these things up for the entire league rather than relying on individuals, because there'll be clubs that will be able to do it better than others. So get those skilled individuals involved and let's sit around the table and just work out a plan for everyone rather than just trying to work out a plan for your each individual club, because then it'll become a point of it become dog eat dog and everyone will just try to survive. Whereas we can do it all together, we've got the best chance of looking after the league itself. I think I mentioned ice hockey quite a bit when I'm on this, and that's how the league works in the British Elite League. Ice hockey, they work as a unit. They don't work as clubs competing against each other. They work for the benefit of the league. And I think that would be a good approach for in these times. I'm all for kind of battles on the pitch, but right now I think we need to look after each other within our level, and that'd be a good way to do it. So perhaps it needs a few bodies just to bang heads together and have a discussion and see how maybe we can come up with a plan, and then put that plan to these people that are at the top that make decisions.
The Let Fans In campaign showed what can be achieved when we work together, basically, and I think that's a good point. But there is a lot of sort of arguments and divisive sort of opinions between everyone at the moment, which is, you know, even between players. So it's difficult, but if we, like you say, if we all came together, it could work. But we need. I think you're right, Derek. I think we do need a plan put in place. Like, this is how exactly we would do it, using the sort of template of English non-league, I would suggest. But let's sort of move on. With fans, what are your sort of concerns surrounding the sort of fans' perspective of this, Sean?
For me, it just boils down to the we spoke about before, but the health of fans. It's a huge outlet for them to go to get to watch a game of football. And the fact that the door's being closed on that, it's something that I think needs addressed sooner rather than later, because I think we're able to act in a sensible way. We just need to be given the opportunity to do so. But I don't know, for me, that's the biggest thing. We spoke obviously about clubs, it's the financial aspect. Hopefully we see those funds going out soon for players. There's a few things to address there. The main thing for fans, it's just getting them through the gate to be able to enjoy the football as it's intended to be enjoyed, because I think that for a lot of people, that's a big part of the week. That's what they look forward to. It's a Saturday, it's going out, watching some football, and as daft as it sounds, getting some fresh air, to be honest. And I think it's having a bigger impact than a lot of people would think, shutting the door to fans.
Obviously, with no fans coming in, ourselves at BSC Glasgow are kind of thinking of what to do to get the games out. And we've decided to live stream our games on Twitch, on my Twitch channel. So we've basically made the judgment call that we're going to put the games out for free and put a donation link there. So if anyone wants to donate to the club, they can do. Because we didn't think it would be worthwhile charging for it, basically. It probably makes more sense for us as a club to just get the games out there for folk to see them. But it's obviously been a hell of a lot of work for us behind the scenes to try and get it all set up. So that's obviously going to be on a Saturday for anyone that kind of wants to come in and watch, starting this weekend against Albite. But obviously, if anyone has got any questions on live streaming, given that I do it every week, I do it three times a week generally on Twitch, so I've got a decent understanding of the platform, if that's the way you want to go, or YouTube is the other one. Chris has obviously got a fair bit of experience on YouTube as well. But please do reach out to us, and we have had people already get in touch with us asking for kind of a wee bit of advice and opinions and so on. I'm not going to call myself an expert, because everyone's still got stuff to learn, but I've been doing it for a couple of years now. I've done all the preparation now for my first ever kind of on-site live stream, rather than sitting in front of a computer. If that goes well, I'll be in a much better position to help other people as well. So fingers crossed for this weekend, and we'll see how it goes. But can I touch on what Sean was saying there, more about the general fan side of things? I think I'm probably quite representative of a lot of people that go to games, because I work Monday to Friday, and the minute I've been working from home for, 6 months plus, so I've not seen any colleagues of mine. On a Sunday, I tend to kind of chill out, that's my rest day. So Saturday's my outlet, football is my outlet to go out, to have a laugh, to meet people, and maybe go to the pub for a pint. And no having it has been murder for 6 months, absolute murder. And it's no wonder that we're seeing so many mental health issues coming through recently in the pandemic, because a lot of people, it's going to sound a wee bit kind of like I'm making assumptions here, but I think on the whole, a lot of guys especially struggle to talk openly about mental health and such. Like, football is an outlet for them to feel better about life. And even if your team loses, you still get the buzz of going to a game, get a chat, all that kind of thing. And one thing I don't think a lot of people are considering is how the benefits it could have of letting people back into games at our level, just in terms of like mental health's not often included in the health and safety aspect, I don't think, not enough anyway. And it's something we shouldn't be scared to talk about, because as I say, I think a lot of people are in the same boat as me, that that's their outline. Without that, it's a really tough existence for a lot of folk, let's be honest. Like, you just need to go on Twitter to see people struggling every day, you know. It's in the work of people like Back Inside, that we've got a good relationship with Libby, who's been on the podcast before. There's loads of organisations out there doing great work, but anything we can do to help is surely got to be a net positive. And that's one thing I'd appeal to anyone that's thinking about potentially coming up with a plan to get fans back in. Consider the benefits. Don't just consider what we're going to do to mitigate the risks.
Yeah, that's a great point, Moz. I think we're probably quite focused on the business and the money involved and survival of the clubs. But yeah, there's that flip side of the fans, where there's an absolute kind of community spirit around kind of teams at our level. And I think, as you say, it can be very, very important, not just to the fans, but to players as well. You probably find there's players out there that are in the same boat, where football is their release, and it takes you away from the kind of mundane, and as you say, the Monday to Friday and stuff like that. So I think, yeah, it's a great point you've made there in terms of health and wellbeing. It's very, very important. I know kind of the grassroots level in the youth football, that has been something that's been pushed quite hard from a lot of coaches and the people involved in that to get that back so soon. They're going to be obviously getting back in what July time roughly was, so that was important to kids, to get them out, get them active and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, I think you're absolutely right about the health and wellbeing and on the mental aspects of having football back.
Yeah, and just to call you, Derek, if I can, I wouldn't say you are representative of fans really. I mean, because you support BSE, let's face it.
Oh, here we go. The Hella Beath fan that pretended he was a Celtic fan.
you guys make obviously excellent points. I think it's fair to note the players as well, because I know there's been certain players that have been struggling as well. So it's all important, really. But you discussed the sort of business end, Ben. Is there additional costs for clubs with fans potentially coming back? Obviously, you know, they would have to get the volunteers back. They would have to run, you know, have toilets open, have pretty much everything open again for, say, even 100 fans. There's cleaning involved potentially, obviously, due to the regulations of COVID, match day staff, social distance, changing rooms. I think the changing rooms is an interesting one, because I think we've mentioned it certainly in our discussions, but not every club, I think, has the capacity to run socially distanced changing rooms. So I don't know if there's a cost in maybe getting something external. I don't know if that's been talked about. The main thing, obviously, is paying their players. You know, if clubs, you mentioned it earlier, Ben, about players. I mean, I'm assuming if a season doesn't go ahead or clubs can't play, then are all their players basically free? Are they still within contracts? There's other things to consider, really, in terms of the clubs as well.
I think the other thing you'll find is you'll actually lose players, maybe not playing. You might have guys that are kind of coming towards the end of their careers who are maybe drop down the leagues, for example, and get to 34, 35, still can do a job at tier 5, tier 6, tier 7, but if they have one season out, they might be like, nah, I'm not going to bother going back. The following season, you might lose a bit of quality in the league as well. So I think that's a thing. Just on your point about kind of extra costs, personally, I haven't really looked into it in terms of what's what would be involved financially, but certainly you've got to think there would be some extra costs, and whether or not is it viable then for clubs if there is extra costs in terms of training. But I think for me, getting the fans back in is the first point. And I think maybe this is more to the players who are shouting about showers and changing rooms and all this. Let's fight one fight first. If we can get the fans back in, then we can look at the changing rooms and the showers facility. Because let's remember, without the fans, these guys are nobodies. They won't be able to play, get paid. They won't be able to have a cup to play for if the fans aren't there. So I think for me, that's the fight. Let's not fight too many fights at once. Let's just get the fans back in first, and then let's look at the changing rooms. Because I think, obviously, I've mentioned Jason Leach's name quite a few times today, so I hope he listens to this podcast. He made a point about, you said earlier, Chris, about you can't have it all. So I think that's maybe if they're looking at it like that from his perspective, I think that's something we need to think about at our level. Is, yeah, let's get the fans back in first, but we can't have all. So maybe let's just wait a wee bit, and we'll get the changing rooms back at a later date. Because I think it's really important to get the fans first, and then let's sort out the other things at a later date. Because as I say, these guys won't be able to play if they don't have any fans, because clubs won't be able to survive. It's simple as that.
Yes, on that note, it's really hard for us, I think, to basically, I guess, prioritise. And I don't want anyone to think, listening in, that we're sort of putting fans over the health and safety of players, but it is a really great point you made there, Ben. But it is a concern for even for us. I mean, I think we do a decent job of representing non-league, and obviously the players are a massive factor. It's them that put on the game, them that play. But I don't want anyone listening in thinking that we're basically prioritising fans over the health and well-being of the players, and I just hope that's not the case, really.
Do you know what it boils down to? I think what we need, see when it was the early stages of the virus post-lockdown, and we had that roadmap with the stages, I think we need that again for football, in terms of, if these markers are hit, this will be allowed. Then further on, if these further markers are hit, then we'll allow, say, changing rooms or something that lays it out in black and white, so that you don't have this kind of muddy waters where clubs are going, well, what's the logic? What's happening? Where are we? See if they, even if it was something that was seen as unattainable, like, say, for example, changing rooms, they said, right, you're not getting that unless the virus numbers are way down and there are numbers below 0.5, for example. We're nowhere near that. But if teams knew that's what they needed, they'd say, well, we'll wait until we get to that point because we've got certainty there. And you can't be fully certain with the virus, it's always changing, but a little thing like that would go a long way, I think, just in terms of almost showing clubs the respect to say, look, we're going to treat you like adults and say, this is what's going to happen when this happens, rather than just telling you as and when we decide, if that makes sense. I think that would go a long way to making a big difference, and especially in terms of the attitude of people in charge of clubs and all that kind of thing.
And just to sort of wrap up, let's end with a sort of government stance. Obviously, we've mentioned that the rate, I think it's the R rating, obviously that's a bit of a concern because there's a number of COVID cases rising. I know in Michael Booth posted something, I never actually posted it out, but there is the way Germany is running it in non-league is the fact that they're doing it by population. If certain areas, via population or the number of cases, that's how they're running it in terms of letting fans. And I think that would be a good model if it would work. There's a lot of things to consider, but I think it goes back to the fact that we really need a plan. But I think the government probably are concerned if they let football in, or they let fans in back to football, and then it all goes awry, if you will, then they could potentially be blamed. And I think that's the concern for everyone higher up. Obviously, they don't want to be blamed for anything. But again, there's examples in English non-league, as you mentioned, Derek, that it can work. It can work without potential spreading of the virus if we're sensible about it.
Something I've got in my notes, I think we were touched on, is the conversation about promotion and relegation. Do you want to discuss that?
No. Are we going to open that can of worms here?
Nah, just it's on my list. That's the only reason. I mean, if you don't want it, it's fine. But like,
we can put a bottom line under it just now if you like, because I got feedback on it. So, if anyone's wondering, basically, there's been rumours going about. Colin McMenamin tweeted them out as well. That League Two were trying to avoid relegation again this coming season. given that they're only playing a 27-game season, they were trying to say, oh, it's not a full season, therefore no relegation. We've been assured by the highest possible authority that that's not the case. So as long as it stays that way, we're fine. Don't believe the rumours for now. If something is awry, we'll hear about it, don't worry. And we'll hear about it for the relevant channels. That's all I'll say.
Asterisk, yet. Not the case yet.
Indeed, yet is the right word. But as of now, no worries. And if anything is awry, keep an eye on George Fraser's Twitter.
Yeah, brilliant.
I've just got to say, I mean, I just found that those tweets, I feel like, where would they come from? Why would that, I mean, I know it's rumour, but I mean, there must be some discussion somewhere that behind the scenes or between clubs or something that's came from, because there's no way that Collins made that up on his own. You know what I mean? There's something said somewhere, do you know what I mean? So I think that's a concern to watch out for, that this could be coming in the tracks and at some point.
And it's probably for the best that's came out now and been rubbished, because...
Aye, exactly, aye.
I reckon there's one or two certain clubs in League 2 that are cacking it about relegation regardless. And this has tried to give them a wee outlet to maybe go, maybe we could avoid it another year. It's not happening.
Aye, there's definitely an undercurrent, but there always is, to be fair. You know, there was, you know, towards the end of last season, the whole time of the whole during lockdown and stuff like that. It's just... I'm just sick of the negativity, to be honest. I've made a post on my Twitter, obviously, that I'm glad that football is back. And obviously, on that note, we'll get into actual competitive games to discuss. Obviously, starting at Kelty versus St Johnstone in the Betfred Cup. Are you looking forward to that one, John?
Yeah, definitely. Looking forward to seeing Kelty playing a game against SPL opposition, I suppose. Could go one either ways, obviously. It could be an absolute drubbing, or we might see Kelly put on a bit of performance, which would be fantastic to see. But more than anything, I suppose, I'm just looking forward to competitive football. It's been far, far too long since we've had a team at this level playing in competitive football. So, yeah, really looking forward to that. It's on Wednesday night, obviously, now instead, because St Johnstone are playing today. But, yeah, definitely looking forward to that one.
Just before we get into it, Sean, is it getting live streamed, and what's the arrangements, just so folk know?
So yeah, we will be live streaming this one. It's through Kelty Hearts TV, so you can find the links to that on all their social media or through their website as well. And we'll be going live shortly before kickoff and covering the game right through and catching up with the gaffer and a couple of the players after the game as well. So yeah, really interesting sort of venture for the whole club. Obviously, yours truly getting to do the commentary for the game, so cacking it a little bit because there might be a few listeners into it. But looking
I'm
forward
to buy that stream now. I'm paying for that stream to see that. I'm looking forward to seeing you come
and then obviously Moz
on Saturday. I'm making no plans for Wednesday night. I'm going
to
be watching.
Glad to hear it.
That's recording it for a blooper reel.
Yeah, so we'll stay on Kelly since obviously. You know, we're moving into the Lone League now. They're obviously hosting Edinburgh University at New Central Park on Saturday, the first of the sort of Lone League fixtures. Back to the predictions, but I'm guessing that's a Kelty Hearts win.
I think so.
I agree with that.
It's really hard to kind of do predictions at this point because everyone's pre-seasons look so different.
Yep.
Purely got to base it on squads, don't we? For week one. And I think Kelty's get a better squad on paper. Probably helps them the fact that they're playing St Johnstone midweek as well to get another game in the legs before they get running. A competitive game rather than a friendly. And I can't see any other result than Kelty win now.
Yeah, agreed.
For myself, I think no many teams have obviously taken points off of Kelty in the last couple of seasons, but Edinburgh Uni are a team that came to New Central Park, albeit a couple of seasons ago, and went away with a point. Kelty have obviously got those games either side as well against St Johnstone and Dundee United, which are going to be tough games for the boys to play in. So I think Edinburgh have picked the right time to come to New Central Park, I think, but you can't really see anybody going away with 3 points apart from Kelty, I think.
Moving on, obviously we'll stick to another uni team. University of Stirling are hosting East Kilbride. University of Stirling actually beat East Kilbride the last sort of competitive game they played. Obviously, a kind of famous victory, if you will, at Gay Park last season. Obviously, I'm quite for University of Stirling. I got on with Chris Geddes and the guys there, but it'd be tough with a sort of new look East Kilbride, the quality they brought in. I don't know how many surprises there'll be, but that would be one that I would suggest there might be a surprise if there's going to be. I would say, because we've seen how sort of good University of Stirling can play against the sort of top teams, and there's always seems to be uni teams, much to the chagrin of opposition fans, always picking up results against the so-called bigger teams. But I think looking at the squads, obviously the strength, you would expect probably East Kilbride to win that one.
Yeah, this one I'm really looking forward to seeing. East Kilbride have obviously been touted as title contenders for the season after a bit of a ropey year last year. They've made some cracking signings, and we're going to see now whether they've had time to gel and whether they can actually put it all together on the pitch, because with some of the other teams that are in the Lowland League, they're going to have to hit the ground running for the get-go. And like you say, it's definitely a potential banana skin playing against Stirling Uni.
Yeah, I still think East Kilbride will win this one. And the reason I say that, if anything, I think the current situation has probably hurt the Uni sides more than others, because obviously they'd maybe want fresh blood coming in with freshers and so on into the Unis, into the team. It's been a lot harder to bring in boys to trials and such like for the Uni side of things. Don't begrudge Chris or Dorian the hardships they're going through at all and doing their day-to-day management. But as we know, Chris always has his team set up really well, really organised. They play good football as well. So it's not out with the realms of possibility to see them get something here, but I just think with the circumstances the way they are, East Kilbride have got everything in their favour.
It's probably a good time for Stirling to actually get East Kilbride, because who knows, East Kilbride maybe take a wee bit of time to gel and maybe come in cold to the game on Saturday.
True, yeah.
So you might, if you maybe got them maybe what, end October, November, you maybe by that point they'll be up and running, got a bit of form. So yeah, I think it'll be an interesting game and definitely one to watch, because I think there's that little kind of caveat that there's potentially a wee bit of a slow start for East Kilbride.
Berwick Rangers will be hosting Vale of Leven at Shieldfield Park. I'm actually been quite impressed with Berwick Rangers. I think they've had quite a few decent tests against like the SPFL teams. Lewis Allen looks like a fantastic signing. He's been scoring goals. Jordan Sinclair, obviously, that we know from Edinburgh City. I would suggest that Berwick might be sort of, I think they'll do better than they did last season, but you know, they could be in the sort of bracket of teams that can push. I think Vale of Leven have improved. I've seen some of their results. Obviously, the one at the weekend there wasn't great in terms of getting beat by Leaf Athletic, but I think both teams have improved, but I would probably still go with the home win for Berwick there.
I think that's fair. Berwick have kind of gone under the radar, I think, with a lot of the moves they've made. Obviously, we've been full of praise for what they've been doing off the pitch recently, but I think on the pitch, they're looking a much better side than people realise. To the point we'd maybe need to say they're dark horses, because I don't think anyone's touting them to challenge, but would it be really that surprising if they got in a good run? You know, it's... I reckon Berwick will win this reasonably handily, to be honest. And that's no slight against Vale of Leven. I just think folk don't realise the kind of the decent business Berwick have done over the kind of 6 month off period.
Yeah, I'm not quite there in touting them to be at the top of the table yet, but I'm with you in terms of, I wouldn't be surprised if I saw them up there. I still got to pick them for this game. Vale of Leven last season they struggled to score goals. Like Chris alluded to there, they've been knocking them away during pre-season. If they can find the back of the net a little bit more, you know, they could find themselves a wee bit away from the drop early on. But yeah, you've got to back Berwick for this one, I think.
Yeah, I think just for me, Berwick, I think Monty made a point about them doing well off the park. I think for me, I don't really know a great deal about the Lowland League at the moment, and I think Berwick are one of the teams that I've noticed quite a bit, certainly off the park. So I think maybe you might find that that might just kind of reap its rewards on the park, where they've maybe done well in the recruitment and maybe just may have a good chance, as I say, good potential there in terms of club. I think I agree with Sean, though, maybe a little bit too soon for Berwick, but I think next year or two, definitely be watch out for them.
Inverness United's first game in the Lowland League on Saturday against Cumbernauld Colts. Bit of an unknown, to be honest. I think, we'll obviously, as the season progresses, we'll get to know a wee bit more about Bowness. I know a few of the players, but obviously I haven't seen them play for a few years or whatever. Cumbernauld Colts, I think, look quite solid, decent depth. I'm going to go with a draw for that.
I can't recall this one. I think Colts are stronger than they were last year. I think that's the first thing to point out. Bowness have largely got the same kind of squad together. But look at what Bonnyrigg did coming up for the East of Scotland with largely the same squad. So we'll just need to, as you say, Chris, we'll find out more about Bowness as we go. But I can't call it. So I'm going to have to sit on the fence, same as you here.
Yeah, absolutely. It'll be interesting to see what Bowness can do here, because we've been talking about finding levels a lot before quarantine kicked in and before COVID. It was all about teams finding their level. That was always a hot topic. And we saw Kelty and Bonnyrigg make the step up and immediately find a place at the top of the league. It'll be interesting to see where Bowness slot into things. And with both of you, you can't call this one. You can't call any Cumbernauld Colts game. They're such an unpredictable side. They win the ones they're not supposed to, and they lose the ones they're meant to win. So, yeah, I'm going to play it safe and go for a draw in this one as well, I think.
And our first, we have to really give this game of the week, let's be honest. Everyone can see it live on Mozza's Twitch. I'm sure he'll appreciate the plug. But
I'm buzzing.
BSC Glasgow versus Dalbeattie Star. Yeah, that's got to be the game of the week, because, as I say, you know, with everything that's going on, everyone can see it, everyone can enjoy Mozza's commentary. I still believe that's why BSE brought out the squad numbers, to be honest with you, mate. But we'll wait and see. But what are your thoughts? Obviously, if you're looking at it on paper, you would expect probably BSE to have the better team, especially being at home. Dalbeattie Star, I've not really been keeping up too much with what they've been doing in terms of their friendly results, but I think it's a solid test for BSE, but I think they'll, depending on how things gel and whatnot, I think it should still be a BSC victory there.
Yeah, I think there's two big question marks for BSC now going into the season. Firstly is going forward, because it's a brand new strike force. We'll need to see how they gel and get running, because it's never easy when you're replacing such an effective tandem as, well, Thomas Collins, Tam Orr, Martin Green, all three have gone. So that's a lot of goals that have disappeared over the last, over the summer. But it looks like we've done pretty well in recruitment. We've brought in not just kind of young boys, but Andy Gagan's a fantastic signing for us. The other question mark I've got is in goals, because we've lost Marshy, unfortunately, given his day job is in the Celtic development system as a coach. It's just not compatible with the way the bubbles are working and so on. So it looks like Lyle Avchi's going to get the nods previously with Annan. I don't really know much about him in terms of, I've never seen him play. So fingers crossed that he can take up the mantle, because Marshy was arguably the best keeper in the league, in my opinion. But I will see. And I'll be honest, I'm more nervous about saying something or doing something stupid on stream than I am about the game. So the problem is with live streaming, there's no escape, and Sean will know this as well. It just, one flub can get recorded and come back to haunt you forever, so that's part of the fun and games of it. But aye, if anyone fancies coming along, I'll be doing my best to interact as well. It's not just going to be a kind of live game of football. Myself and Martin Fleming, who's our match reporter, are going to present it, and we're going to kind of chat away and take questions and such like. So hopefully it'll be something a bit different and good to watch and get a bit of banter going as well.
I was going to say was, you were spot on big game call on camera there. If you've watched the Steny highlights, I think it finishes with me calling a red card. Wasn't even a yellow card. No card. Just a free kick. And he squeezes it in at the end of the highlights. Excellent.
I'm getting twitched in the big telly. I'm going to sit down and just enjoy the game. We've got the game on Saturday, so I'm just going to be sitting there watching Mozza on the big TV, sitting on the couch, get some cans of Coke in and some Doritos and just enjoy the atmosphere.
Hope you've got a widescreen telly because I've got a massive heat.
Oh, aye. Big enough.
I've started every Lowland League season we've covered it watching Dalbeattie Star, so this will be another time I'll probably be at home on Saturday watching the BSC Dalbeattie Star game. Looking forward to it. Actually looking forward to it. I hope you do well, Mozza. I don't know if I'll be jumping in the chat, because usually if I'm watching football, it's a full screen job, but I might give you a wee bit of pellers and a wee bit of this and that, depending on how the game goes, obviously.
I'll definitely be doing that.
We were saying earlier on about, obviously, if clubs would get questions in live stream to come to us, I'd encourage you, if you're thinking about it for your club, to give it a watch, even if it's not live. If you go back and watch it, you'll still be able to see the chat and what people are saying on the side, because it gives you the ability, if you're a viewer, if you so wish, to interact. So you can just sit and watch it if you want, or if you want to kind of speak to other folk, have a bit of banter. It's a great thing to have there. Genuinely, if anyone hasn't seen the impact that Twitch and YouTube can have on things like this, give it a try. I can't encourage it enough.
East Stirlingshire versus Civil Service Strollers, a game that never fails to provide goals. They've scored in every game against each other, both sides. Civil, for me, are a wee bit unknown. I noticed they've obviously loaned in a keeper from Rangers recently, but I don't really know too much in terms of their squad. I'm assuming that it'll be the same as last season. A few loan players here and there with a few of the guys. I would probably... It's going to be close, I think, either way, depending on the result. But Shire at home, I would suspect that they'd probably be favourites for that for me.
Have they not had a few players kind of leave them over the summer? I noticed from my own experience, their goalkeepers just left and a few guys dropped down to like Darvel and things like that. Will that actually have a big effect on them in terms of player turnover?
I think they're still pretty strong starting 11-wise.
Yeah.
The issue for Shire is the depth, I think, is... You're right, they've lost a few bodies, but they've still got a very decent team there. And Nicky Lowe's our main man. He's a great player at this level. If he keeps them ticking, doesn't matter who he's setting up, he's still setting them up 3 or 4 chances a game. So it depends what effect this kind of 10-day period's had on Shire, I think. If the boys have still been able to train themselves and keep themselves ticking over, they might be a wee bit rusty and a wee bit kind of behind Civil at the start, or they might tail off at the end, we'll see. But I do fancy Shire to win it, but it's not a very confident pick. I don't think any of the picks are very confident.
Brilliant. Galloway-Aberdeen Rovers host Bonnyrigg Rose at the Netherdale. I think, for me, I've mentioned it, I think Bonnyrigg Rose are still as strong as they were, even probably more so from last season. Gala, certainly a team that, it's hard to say if they've improved, really. I mean, they've kept, obviously, Cezander Murray and stuff like that, and Scott Taylor McKenzie, and most of their key players, but again, what you're saying was, I think it's a bit of an unknown, but I would, given... based on the squads and the strength of depth and stuff like that, I would probably give Bonnyrigg Rose the advantage there.
Netherdale's a tough place to go, is the only thing. They do tend to do well at home, but I think you've got to give the advantage to Rose just purely on what they've been able to do the last year or two, and pretty similar squad still there, team chemistry will still be there. Yeah, I'd pick Rose myself.
Yeah, I echo exactly what you said, both said. I think Rose, it's a difficult place to go, but you'd expect Rose to go in and get all 3 points in that one, I reckon.
And our final fixture, Gretna 2008 versus Spartans at Raydale Park. It's going to be a tough one for Gretna. Spartans have won every league game in the last day. I think the record goes back to 2015 or something like that. Spartans are quite a strong team. I think they have obviously lost to Jack Smith and David Greenhill and players like that, but I think Spartans are still quite strong for the league. Gretna, I think they've improved. They brought in a lot of the younger guys, a couple of guys on loan from Greenock Morton. I would still, obviously, going by history and whatnot, I would suspect that Spartans are probably the favourites, but I'm not going to make a prediction because every time I do, I get it wrong with Spartans. The Spartans curse from the last season, I guess.
I would just say I think Spartans have got to be favourites in this one until we see something different for both sides. But looking down the full fixtures list, if I had to pick out a game that there could be a potential upset, I think this is probably the one that I would earmark, going down to Radio Park and with the changes that both sides have seen during pre-season. Yeah, potentially, if there's going to be an upset anywhere, I think it could be here.
I kind of agree with Sean there. I expect at least one of these games to be an upset, by the way, I should say that. But Gretna's looking pretty solid. And Jonathan, who always listens to us, will not forgive me if I don't say that. They give credit where it's due, but I still think Spartans go in as favourites. I'm going to plump for a draw on that one.
Interesting. I think, for me, the problem I have with Gretna, I think they have a better team, don't get me wrong, but I think they're still lacking a wee bit of experience. A lot of the younger guys coming in, obviously, from Greenock Morton and the guys coming up from the youth teams, I think they need a couple more experienced players. I don't know how that's going to work out, if there's still time to obviously get a few guys in, but that would be my one concern for Gretna. Obviously, the Caledonian Braves are on the bye week because of 17 clubs. Just a wee shout out to the Cali Braves. I think they're doing a fantastic job with the live streaming. I've got a couple been fantastic, and obviously Neil McLaughlin's hat trick the other day. I don't know if you guys noticed that. Absolutely fantastic. One of the goals was an absolute peach from like 40 yards.
Belter, absolute belter. Can I ask you two, just out of interest, what do you think about Cali Braves going on this year? Because I think they're going to surprise people. I'm pretty impressed with the way they're going about things.
When we discussed the sort of surprise packages, I think both of us, me and you, Mozza, called out Cali Braves as a potential. Certainly with Ross McNeil and Jack Smith, and we know how good Neil McLaughlin is and David Sinclair. I think they've got a solid team, actually. I think they could potentially surprise a few. They've had a few decent results, obviously, against East Fife. The same score as BSC. I noticed the East Fife fans were saying it's BSC all over again and whatnot. But, I really like the look of Caledonian Braves this season, to be honest with you.
No, absolutely. I think last season they obviously finished mid-table, and I think they were a far better side than mid-table. So obviously it's a very strong league, but the improvements that they've made on the team that they had last season, I think, I think you could be right. It could be we're calling it a surprise package, but we can't really call it a surprise package when we're all calling it a surprise package. But certainly mid-table last season, and they were better than where they finished, and I think they've only got better this season. So, yeah.
100%. I think their issue last year was centre-back, wasn't it? Like, they were just leaking too many goals, ultimately. It looks like they've sorted it. So, you're not going to get many better strike forces in the league than what they've got right there. Midfield are very strong as well. So, I quite fancy them to do well. There's very few games I'm going to pick against them, put it that way.
You're not picking against them this week.
One thing I will say about them is... It goes back to what we used to say about the old Edisport. They have to be consistent. They can't. Yeah. If they want to be one of the top teams, they have to... Well, firstly, they have to actually get results against the bigger teams. I know they obviously beat East Kilbride last season, but they need to start picking up against the Celtics, the Borrerigs, the Stirlingshires, all these sort of teams, BSC. If they can do that, then they'll be in a good place. But they also have to be consistent against, you know, the lower sides, if you will. That's the main thing that Cali Braves need. They need consistency, because we praised them for picking up really decent results last season, but always seemed like they always, when we thought they had a bit of momentum, it would just fall flat again. So that's the thing with the Caledonian Braves. But I think we went on long enough. We're obviously excited with the fact that, you know, we've got football back, and I don't know how long this podcast is going to be on for. I think this is probably going to be the longest podcast that we've ever done, by the looks of it. A lot of talking points, obviously, and whatever else. But I'm glad to be back. Hopefully, it's football chat from here until everyone's back. Hopefully, and we'll we'll obviously finish up here with plugs. We'll obviously let you plug the game on Saturday. I think you already have a few mozza, but where can people find you and obviously yourself on Twitch?
Well, just before I do that, because Ben has left us now, at Mr. Ben Grant on Twitter is where you'll find him. He's just nipped off right at the death. But for myself, it's at Mozza Plays on Twitter. If you go on my Twitter, you'll find all sorts of links all through the week for this BSC stream. Just try to spread the word. But if you're looking for the actual address, it's twitch.tv/MozzaPlays. It'll be on. So don't expect a Sky Sports type production. We've done our best with what we can do. I've put a wee couple of teasers out on the Twitter of wee videos and things we've put together for it. So it'll be different for what a normal broadcast will be. Hopefully it'll be good to watch, fingers crossed. And if you fancy coming and watching, even better.
I guess I'll go up next. For myself, you can find links through the official catch up, obviously, because I always forget my own Twitter handle. I'm sure it's in there somewhere though. For watching the game, we're obviously live streaming on Wednesday and on Saturday, and you can find it. I'll share it out as well, but you can find it on the Kelly Hearts page as well. So some midweek football there for everybody before you have to make that agonising decision come the weekend, BSC or Kelly.
At Sean Spedding 89, by the way, folks.
Superb, thank you very much.
And you can find me at Rampant FM and obviously the official catch up at Official Catch Up, Lowland League Catch Up for Facebook. Instagram is official.catchup, Sean.
Yes.
Yeah. So many socials, you can find us everywhere, obviously on Spotify, SoundCloud, just anywhere that there's podcasts, basically. But we appreciate the support, as always, people that are listening in. I hope, I don't know if too many will listen in, like the full hour and whatever it's been, but we appreciate everyone's listening in, and the players, the gaffers, the clubs, people like George Fraser, obviously, and the West of Scotland, South of Scotland, East of Scotland. I think we've pretty much covered everything today. Been a good chat, but let's have football chat, the main thing going forward, I think.
Absolutely.
Football's back. We've waited long enough to see it.
Yep.
Touch wood, all the games go ahead, everyone stay safe and all that as well. But it's just nice to see that, isn't it?
Yeah.
Football's back. Thank Christ.
And we'll obviously be back with the Lowland League. I guess we're going back to the Lowland League catch-up until we have news on the other leagues, but I'm actually looking forward to it. It seems like a year or so since we've done a Lowland League catch-up, like a proper Lowland League catch-up, and obviously we'll be doing them, you know, probably weekly throughout the season, depending on how long we go for. But yeah, as I said, 100% appreciate the support, and we'll see you next week.